Headlines.
From Washington, D.C., the capital of the divided states of America, it's time for the show that brings you both sides of the issues that matter. In the right corner, I am Republican investigative reporter Lee Stranahan.
And over here in the left corner, this is Mike Hirsch filling in for Garland Nixon, who will be back Monday. So don't go anywhere. Garland's come back. And I'm the National Communications Director for Progressive Democrats of America, pdamerica.org.
You're listening to the most disruptive radio show in America. It's time for Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan, guest hosted all this week by Mike Hirsch. In round one of today's show, Mike and I are going to be discussing Donald Trump's verbal assault on Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell after McConnell struck the first blow and attacked Donald Trump for their failure to pass health care. We'll be talking about that in round one. In round two, speaking of verbal fireworks, more on North Korea. As Donald Trump says he did not go far enough with the fire and fury comment, meanwhile, Pyongyang is preparing their assault on Guam. And in round three, everybody knows the media hides things. Mike and I will be talking about stories we think the media has buried that you may not have heard about, and our answers may surprise you. That's all coming up in round three. That's all today on Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan with guest host Mike Hirsch. Hey, Mike, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Lee. How you doing?
Doing very well. I know everyone was nervous because it was like 10 seconds before the show started.
We're getting real relaxed here.
No, I'm a pro. I was working right up until the last second.
I saw you working.
Preparing something for the second segment that everyone will enjoy. That's all. I'll leave it at that.
You're giving it all, leaving nothing on the table.
Here's the thing. When you have a possible nuclear war with North Korea,
I thought you meant between Trump and McConnell.
We'll talk about that. That's the first nuclear war. But when you have a possible nuclear war on a table, I like to go full Stanley Kubrick and find the humor in it. And so I have something for us in round two, but you'll see about that. But yeah, let's talk about this McConnell thing before we talk about the North Korea, because this is, and here's the thing too, I got to say this. If we were following the regular news cycle, which is what everybody else is talking about, we would be doing like three segments on Taylor Swift's butt cheek. That's what I think would be going on because that's, I wake up, I was awake already. So I look at my watch because my watch gives me news alerts. And like there's three breaking news alerts about Taylor Swift's butt cheek. That's literally.
She's accused a DJ of groping her butt.
Yes.
He says he didn't do it. He got fired. He's suing her because he got fired. Okay,
yes.
That's all we really...
No, that's it. That's it. But it made... And by the way, they didn't say butt. Let me just point that out.
What did they say?
I'm not going to say it.
Oh, really?
I don't know if I can say it.
They're saying it.
Here's the thing. They're saying it, but they ain't us. They ain't us. I have a feeling we might be under extra special FCC scrutiny.
Authority.
Exactly right, yeah. But anybody can look it up. I think the news there may be that Taylor Swift has a butt cheek. That is possibly...
Maybe that's the hidden part of the story that only Lee Stranahan is uncovering.
That's right. That's right. That's deep investigative reporting. Hey, here's what's, let me mention this too. If you're listening to us on 105.5 FM inside the Beltway, hey, welcome. Tell your friends, tell your neighbors, roll down your window, turn up your Walkman. Also, you can catch us on reruns if you're listening to us live either there or on the Sputnik app, which Mike is good enough to mention all the time.
Love the app.
Or on SputnikNews.com. You can also check out replays on iTunes, on Spreaker, and in case you like watching the radio, you can check us out on Facebook Live. Go to the Sputnik page on Facebook or on Periscope on my Twitter feed, which is at Stranahan. We're on Periscope right now. Also, while you're on Twitter, make sure to follow Garland Nixon, our co-host, namesake of the show, and also follow at Mike Hirsch. It's at Garland Nixon for Garland Nixon. Mike and Garland are easy. At Garland Nixon, I'm pretty easy. It's at Stranahan.
That's pretty easy, too.
That's easy. But at Mike Hirsch, Hirsch with a...
H-E-R-S-H.
With an E?
No I, no C.
That's what, there's an I in Mike, though.
There is.
There you go.
But not in Hirsch.
So anyway, do all that stuff. So let's talk about this thing with McConnell and Trump. Let me say this first, because we can get into the intricacies. That's a tough word to say. We can get into the intricacies. Doesn't sound tough, but try to say it sometime. Of the healthcare debate itself. But here's what I like about this. I don't like Mitch McConnell, and he's a typical establishment politician. He's what we Trump supporters like to call a rhino, Republican in name only. But, you know, I'm not thrilled with that designation. He's an establishment guy.
Yes. Now,
and so Trump going after him. And here's one of the things I loved about it. Jennifer Rubin, who I also don't like, she's the token conservative over at The Washington Post. She attacked Trump for going after McConnell. This is the Donald Trump I like, the guy who's willing to take on the establishment in his own party. That's what I like to see. So the fact that Trump is out there going after McConnell, and let's remember this, McConnell went after Trump first.
Yeah, let's
because McConnell said his expectations were too high.
He said that he questioned Trump's experience and qualifications. I don't have the direct quote in front of me. Lee, do you have the quote? It's something about how he's new.
Yeah, and I don't have the exact quote in front of me, but what he said was, he said the president's expectations were too high.
He doesn't understand how things work.
That's right, yes. Because that's not smarmy.
He's not as plugged in as Mitch McConnell, who knows how things work. Although Mitch McConnell did call the vote that he lost. So Trump didn't call that vote. That was Mitch McConnell calling the vote.
Well, it's not only that, but here's the thing. Let's talk about the expectations being too high. You don't need to be a Washington insider to know this. The Republicans, the Senate, passed a bill about repealing Obamacare. You remember this?
More than once.
Yes. Right? Now, when they did it, let's be honest about what was happening there. The Republicans knew that there was no way that bill was going anywhere.
They knew that Obama would veto it.
That's
and
right.
And they didn't have the two-thirds to override the veto.
That's right.
So they could have passed anything they wanted.
Right. But so why did they do that? Why did they do that?
Theater.
Well, yeah, theater. And
also raising expectations.
That's right.
Ironically.
Exactly. So in other words, here's my point on that. They passed that bill multiple times. The Senate was all in favor of it when they knew there was no way it would actually become law.
The Senate Republicans were all in favor of it.
That's right. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I'm saying, I'll put it like this. It would be like if the Democrats right now came out and said, you know, I'm making this up.
If the Democrats had the majority.
That's
and
right.
Passed something like everybody gets a puppy or something.
That's right.
Knowing that Trump would veto the puppy bill and then they'd say
and
Trump
then
pays
they,
puppies.
And then if a couple of years from now they've got a Democrat president.
And they can't get the same one through.
And right. And they don't, not can't.
Yeah, there you go.
Don't.
That's a good distinction.
Well, no, I think
so
it is.
So the question is whether McConnell tried to get it through, and you're saying that he didn't try hard enough or he didn't really try to get it through.
No, I'm saying something far worse.
Okay, please go ahead and tell me.
I'm saying it was all theater, and even the vote, the quote-unquote close vote, was theater. In other words, John McCain comes out, and he's the decisive vote against it. Wrong. And here's what I'm saying. If this was done on a secret ballot where you didn't know what anybody's votes were, I'll bet a number of Republicans would have voted against repeal and replace. But you see what I'm saying? In other words, they would have lost by a bigger margin.
They orchestrated the margin.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. Clearly, they orchestrated the margin.
So it's not even theater. It's kind of a deception.
Yeah. Theater, I don't know if you know this.
Theater is like doing something for effect. But what you're saying is they're hoodwinking people.
It's a con game.
Conning people. That's even worse to me than theater. Theater is like kind of a distraction, entertainment. It's not necessarily to fool people, but what you're saying is even worse.
This is like the three-card Monty game outside the theater. It's still in the vicinity of the theater.
It's like a scam off-Broadway.
That's right.
Or on the sidewalk out, you know.
This is, okay.
You got Hamilton going on inside the
And I'm saying
theater.
This is the producers with Gene Wilder and Zero Mostel. That's what I'm saying.
It's,
this is the producers.
It's the scam.
Not the remake with Matthew Broderick. I'm saying it's the original producers.
It's the original.
Yeah.
Producers.
Which was far more disruptive, really.
Over the top, yeah.
That's a great.
Yeah.
That was a great movie, by the way. Mel Brooks. Mel Brooks. His early funny works. But
right.
But no, this is really, it's a deception, because here's the thing. I'm saying the Republicans passed it to get votes and to get money. This is why a Republican has sued them for fraud.
Yeah, they passed it when they knew it wouldn't matter. And when it mattered, they didn't pass it. And you're saying that that was intentional by Mitch McConnell.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And now what I'm saying is they've orchestrated it in such a way that Collins, Murkowski, and McCain were the fall guys on this. And by the way, Garland and I've talked about this before. This is not, Republicans didn't invent this trick. Politicians did. So Democrats have done
it. Probably dates back to like ancient Athens or something,
right,
wherever people had to run for election. There was some kind of scam going on.
Yeah, that's, and it's very deceptive. It's very deceptive. And like I say, it's not a Republican thing. It's both of them. Now, then Trump came out today and said, just recently, they said, well, do you think McConnell should resign? And Trump responds, I don't know. See if he can repeal and replace. Now, what I wish Trump would do.
Well, actually, Trump also said, ask me later.
Ask me later. That's right. Well, which is tough. Again, it's tough talk, but here's.
That's kind of a yes. It's not a no.
It is kind of. No, it is.
It's definitely not a no.
But here's what I wish the president would do. And so if you're listening, by the way, President Trump, if you're listening on 105.5.
Write this down.
Here's the thing. President Trump, I'm sure, has a transistor radio with him at all times, so he could be listening. But President Trump, if you're listening, call out McConnell on what, and by the way, everyone will freak out if you do this. And you can, and feel free to point out examples of where the Democrats have done the same thing, because it's fair. Don't, I'm not pinning it on the Republicans, but I'm saying call out this game. Say, here's what politicians do. They make safe votes when it's safe, but then when the rubber hits the road, they're not going to actually vote that way. And then they orchestrate it behind the scenes. Because I guarantee you, they orchestrated it behind the scenes and were like, okay, you're the one who's going to take the fall on this one.
No question.
McCain.
No question. People will come up to McConnell and say, I can't, you know, if you need me, I'll vote for this. But if you don't need me, I want to flake off on this one.
I'm going to pick on a guy. You said flake off, right?
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, I just want to make sure we don't get in trouble with the FCC there. Because it's close. It's close. I could have misheard
flake.
That.
There's an L in there.
Don't spell that out because it'll be tricky. But no, let's take a guy. I don't know how we would have voted on, but let's take a guy like John Thune from South Dakota. Okay. John Thune from South Dakota. I don't know how he would have voted, but here's the thing. He's in a very conservative state. We'll talk about South Dakota later. He's in a very conservative state. If he comes out and he votes against it now, if he votes not to repeal, not on the straight repeal, he's going to hear from constituents.
Yes.
But Thune is a moderate establishment Republican. In fact, that's who the guy is. Okay. Therefore, he doesn't want to take the heat. Now, you fill in any number of people. Rubio, just go down the line.
And there could be a number of people who live in states where, like Kentucky, where they've expanded Medicaid, and a lot of the people that vote for them would die if the straight repeal went through. So
you can
talk about the tactics and the policy all you want, but at some point, there are real world implications for a lot of these things too.
So I don't like to overhype it to the people would die, because I don't buy that.
Well, except for people will die. I mean, whether you believe in it or not,
people will die.
People don't go to the doctor and they don't.
Yeah, you could.
You know, they don't get medication that they need. They don't get diagnosis.
You could make the counter argument though that the way the system is, for instance, that there are people who are now forced to pay a penalty. And so they can't get actual health care. All they can do is they get the insurance, which doesn't do them any good.
There are a lot
and
of problems.
Who will die.
Yeah, there are a lot of problems with the Affordable Care Act. It's the sometimes Affordable Care Act. And the reason that it's not a very good policy is that it's a Republican policy come up with by Heritage Foundation and Richard Nixon and Mitt Romney.
and voted for by every single Democrat
right.
and pushed by Barack Obama.
Right. And that was the best that they could do at the time because no Republican would vote for anything, not even the Republican plan.
So let me take you on there, too. I don't think it's the best that they could do. Here's what I think.
Those conditions, it was. I mean, we can go real deep into it, but I know all about this, and I know about how the House passed a public option, which, again, has a lot of problems. It's not a sustainable program, but it's better than what we have now.
But here's what I'm saying. There's a reason. What I'm saying is this. I'm saying both the Democrats and the Republicans, both of them, have fealty to the insurance companies. That's what they have.
That's why I'm saying, yeah, they when the Clintons tried to do their very profit-driven private sector health plan, and it collapsed, it was attacked and destroyed by public relations people from the insurance companies. And so I agree with you, Lee.
Yes, but let's point out what happened after that. Then it was embraced by Hillary Clinton. And the reason why, I think, in other words,
this is when she was running it.
No, I know. But then afterwards, she was co-opted clearly by the insurance companies
because
by the time she ran for president in 2008,
she actually argued against trying to do health care reform because she wasn't able to do it. She assumed nobody else could either.
Yes.
And then, she was taking a lot of money from people who told her to stay away from it.
And then in the primaries, Obama was against the individual mandate, and Hillary Clinton was the person who was clearly in favor of the individual mandate. And that's why I say, so she was clearly...
Oh, right. Yeah. No question.
And what I'm saying is everybody gets co-opted on this issue because the big health insurance companies and the big pharmaceutical companies...
The only people who don't are people like Congressman John Conyers, who has for about 10 years has been submitting Medicare, expanded and improved Medicare for all.
Yeah, except here's what I'm going to say about that.
Hold on a second. That's the opposite of co-opted by the health insurance companies, just on that narrow point. And I know you're not for that legislation, but
I'm not going to argue the legislation. Here's what I'm going to argue. I'm going to argue that he's actually co-opted in the same way that I will say Rand Paul is on the other side. Neither one of these guys actually calls out the bogus system that's going on here. They just pass bills that they know aren't going to go anywhere. That's what I'm saying.
Okay. Well, we can examine that later, but...
Yeah.
But not co-opted by the insurance companies.
Coming up in round two, we're going to discuss the latest war words with North Korea, all that and more coming up on Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan with guest host Mike Hirsch all week.
Fault Lines.
We are back. Round two of Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan. All this week, we have special guest host Mike Hirsch filling in for Garland, who is hopefully having a relaxing and enjoyable vacation without me. That's what I'm hoping. I'm hoping that a week without me provides Garland all the rest and R&R he needs.
We'll have to ask him when he comes
back.
That's
right.
Yeah. I can't speak to that.
If he comes back, he may go, you know, I just had a week without Stranahan. Yeah, seems pretty good. Seems like a pretty good option. But anyway, so let's talk about, we talked about the war of words between McConnell and Trump. And now let's talk about the war of words between Trump and Kim Jong-un. Before we talk about the war of words, though, let's talk about the very serious part of this, which is North Korea has announced that they have plans to fire a missile over Japan near Guam.
Yeah, I'd be worried that if they were trying to miss Guam, they might hit Guam because they don't have a very good record of going where they want to go.
Just shooting anywhere in the vicinity of Guam should make people, let's say, in Guam nervous.
And even shooting over Japan should make the people in Japan nervous because these missiles have a tendency to break apart. And so... Who knows? As a matter of fact, the people in North Korea should be worried because it could hit them.
And everybody, including the Chinese, but the South Koreans especially,
yep,
are telling North Korea, I'm not quoting directly, but chill out. That's what they're saying.
We're not down with this.
Yes, that's
we're
right.
We're not okay with this.
That's right. The Hip-Hop Public Relations Department of South Korea has issued a warning to chill out. We're not down with this.
Chill, we're not down.
But, I mean, You know, what else do you say? How do you, like I've said before, how do you solve a problem like Korea? That was my Sound of Music joke.
Thanks for not singing.
You're welcome. But that is the problem here, is how do you deal with a country who is not just talking, but, you know, is actually firing missiles and has been for a long time. So anything we say, we're going to talk about what Trump has said in the war of words, but this is more than just words. And that's the thing that's troubling about it. And then we talked yesterday about the genesis of this report, that it came out in the Washington Post, not from that intelligence sources say that North Korea's got these miniaturized nuclear weapons that can fit on a missile. That is, you know, that's problematic. And so this is, you know, again, it's easy to, it is. We're talking about it. I'll joke about it because.
Yeah, I don't take that report.
I'm nervous.
I don't take that report at face value. What's, you know, a nuclear weapon that can't fit in a missile is basically a suicide weapon, because if you can't fit it on a missile, what are you going to do? Detonate it in your neighborhood? So does the United States have, is our entire nuclear force miniaturized? I mean, the terminology itself it strikes me as odd that they would use that term. That's number one. Number two, there are, you know, the Washington Post was notorious, along with the New York Times, and just about, I'll just say, every major news source, with the exception of, there was one that wasn't, I'll try to remember what it was, we're all beating the drums for the Iraq war, saying that Saddam Hussein had reconstituted his nuclear program, which to me, it sounds like reconstituted orange juice or something. He had it in his freezer in like little cans, getting ready to like mix it in a pitcher. They were talking about he had pipes that he could use for a centrifuge. And one of my favorites was the Winnebagoes of Death, that he had mobile homes that were developing biological weapons. And these were all tall tales that Colin Powell and others, you know, Colin Powell said this at the UN, Condoleezza Rice also said it. They actually put together a marketing group called the White House Iraq Group. Condoleezza Rice, Andrew Card, a bunch of other people, Dick Cheney, and they lied us into a war, and they would never have been able to do it if nearly unanimously the media hadn't fallen in line behind it and claimed that we needed to be very afraid of Iraq. It turns out that none of these accusations were accurate. And now we're getting the same thing about North Korea. Be very, very afraid of North Korea. And I'll tell you right now, I'm like Rex Tillerson. I don't think North Korea is a threat to the United States. And I think Rex Tillerson is wrong about a lot of things. He's right that climate change is caused by people and it's a problem. And he's also right that North Korea is not a threat to the United States. So what do you do when a country is not a threat to the United States but does have nuclear weapons? Well, and that makes them a threat to Japan, South Korea, China, themselves if they mishandle it. I would deal with it like a hostage crisis. You don't try to excite the erratic person who has the ability to harm themselves and people in their immediate vicinity. And I think that that's, you know, I just said Rex Tillerson is wrong about a lot of things, but he's right about that. I think Mitch McConnell is wrong about nearly everything, but he's actually right when he says Trump is very inexperienced and doesn't seem to know what he's doing. McConnell said he didn't know what he was doing about the health care reform. I think Trump doesn't know what McConnell's doing, but I think he's figuring it out. But I think that Trump is completely wrong by getting into a war of words with North Korea. I don't think, you know, people in Trump's own administration think that he's going overboard. They're trying to talk it back and walk it back a little bit,
which I find very interesting. And of course, Trump is continuing to push back on that. And Trump has come out today.
Yeah, he tried to figure out
and said he didn't think he went far enough. He wasn't tough enough.
Tried to take it to 11, like Spinal Tap.
That's right.
10 wasn't, you know, he went to 10, and now he wanted to push it over the ledge. So that was when he's taken it to 11. And here's the interesting thing. He said, fire and fury like the world has never seen, which is kind of pretty far. And he said, well, I didn't go far enough. But he didn't actually go further yet. So he's
Well, there are other planets.
Well,
so
that's
he
true.
Said he said fire and fury like the world has never seen, but he didn't include, let's say, Mars.
Or like the sun.
The sun, that's a good...
That's a lot of fire
that's
there.
That's a good planet.
And fury. It's not really a planet, it's a star.
Wait, what?
It's a... But it's hot.
Oh, okay,
yeah. Talk about global warming, there's a lot...
It's a very hot planet, the sun.
Well, it's a star.
Wait, what do you mean?
It's like...
I'm just trying to prove the Republicans know science, that's
It's like
all.
We're on a show, and you're a host, and I'm the star. It's like, I'm just kidding. You're clearly the star here, Lee.
But here's what's interesting about it, though. So you have people in his administration trying to pull it back. And now what's happened, this is a front page story in the New York Times right now. The New York Times is reporting that China sees this as an opening to be like the adult in the room.
Yep.
And again, you know, here's what I think. On one hand, the rhetoric doesn't really bother me that much. As I indicated earlier, the big issue to me are the actions of North Korea. So for instance, talking tough, I mean, I know it means something, but first off, a lot of the people who were freaked out about this by Trump already don't like Trump.
Well, Rex Tillerson, I think, likes Trump.
Well, but he isn't freaked out about it. He's being diplomatic.
Well, that's his job.
Right. That's what I'm saying. I'm not arguing.
But
I'm saying
he's taking kind of an extreme step of contradicting his president when he's the Secretary of State.
Let's talk about that. I think there's an advantage to playing good cop, bad cop. And I think that when you're in a negotiating position, this is part of the problem with the Obama foreign policy, is nobody took him seriously.
I think people took him very seriously. Obama droned more people than any other president, and his Secretary of State, I wish,
which
was
one?
more diplomatic. Hillary Clinton. I wish she were more like Tillerson, and was more diplomatic than her
That's
president.
That's a headline for you right there.
Rather than less diplomatic than Rex Tillerson, and her eagerness to go with conflict when she was supposed to be the top diplomat, to me, it was very distressing. But, you know, you were talking about good cop, bad cop. I think there's good cop, bad cop, and that's fine. But, you know, what we have is inexperienced, loudmouth, erratic cop who should probably have his gun and badge taken away.
No, I don't agree.
I don't expect you to.
As a negotiating tactic, first off, here's the thing. When you're dealing with military force, I think there's an advantage to being tough, period. What's he supposed to say? We're gonna underhand softball Obama. Like, you've seen the video of Obama throwing the ball at the baseball game once. It was embarrassing, right? So what's Trump supposed to say? Oh, sorry, yeah, sorry, North Korea. We're just going to sort of... Hey, we're going to leave this nuclear weapon right here, and then, no.
What's Trump supposed to say is reasonable things, like what Tillerson is saying.
Yeah, but when you're talking about the use of military force, what's reasonable to say?
What Tillerson is saying.
Which is?
North Korea is not a threat. There's no reason for people to lose sleep over it.
Yeah, that, I, not see, get I don't
into
agree.
A, not get into who can be a bigger jerk.
And by the way, let's talk about a jerk contest. It's not a jerk contest. When you're talking about military force, don't be dainty. That's my point. Don't be dainty. Now, I'm fine. I'm totally fine with someone else in the administration being the quote unquote good cop, especially when they're going to be the ones to sit down to negotiate. But the fact is, Kim Jong-un is a bully, period.
I don't think he's so much a bully. I just think that he's dysfunctional, and he's in a dysfunctional regime. We talked yesterday about how North Korea can't take care of itself.
It's not just he's dysfunctional. He's dysfunctional. He's lobbing missiles constantly towards Japan, towards South Korea.
Not really. He's lobbing missiles around, but you know, the United States is using drones, and Saudi Arabia is using drones that actually target civilians and kill people.
Yes, I know. But again, by the way, some of the people we killed, Anwar al-Awlaki, for instance, who we killed. I'm glad we killed him, and I'm glad we droned him, and if I could go back and do it again, I would. So I have no problem with us droning someone who's a terrorist.
How about weddings?
None whatsoever.
Who, you know, U.S. citizens who aren't accused of anything,
right,
just happen to be
I'm
in the way.
I'm opposed to that, but Amar al-Awlaki,
Obama did a
citizen.
Lot of that, and I was wondering if you would consider that dainty.
No, the way he talked, that was the military taking action.
Well,
he talked, he wasn't threatening anybody.
Well,
I'm in favor, like I say,
well,
to me,
I know
that's
that you're
not
a
the
student
issue.
Of history, and you know, you'll recognize the slogan, talk softly and carry a big stick. That's the way the United States has been successful. Where we're unsuccessful is where we shoot off our mouths and make a lot of noise. And George W. Bush, who was similarly inexperienced, got into some of this as well.
Well, I don't think history proves that. I think actually, if you look at Reagan, who, by the way, was as hated as Trump is in this regard, and everybody was talking about Reagan's going to start a nuclear war and everything else, Reagan helped defeat the Soviet Union by not talking softly, but by talking tough. Now,
he talked firmly, but not erratically. And
North Korea threatened us.
But Tillerson is right when he said they can't threaten us. It's like saying that it's like picking up a brick and saying, I'm going to hit this toddler with it because the toddler is threatening me.
Let's talk about someone who they can hit. South Korea, our ally, and Japan, our ally. So Tillerson is changing moving the goalpost. Well, gee, they can't hit us. And by the way, they can, but, you know.
Actually, Trump said that they're threatening us.
Well, they are threatening us.
They are not threatening us.
No, they are.
They're absolutely
what
not.
What have they said?
See, saying something. See,
why are they showing?
I'm going to quote the wisdom of Lee Stranahan back to Lee Stranahan. It's not what you say. It's what you do and what you can do. And if I say to you, Lee, I'm going to run over you with a unicorn, that's not a threat because I don't have a unicorn. And you're playing into North Korea's game by pretending that they have capacity that they do not have. Now, can they threaten South Korea? Yes. Can they threaten Japan? Yes. Can they threaten China? Yes.
Did they just launch their longest range missile ever?
I'm sure they did. But here's the thing. Rex Tillerson is right. North Korea does not threaten the United States and cannot threaten the United States. They can hurt our feelings, but I think we can be a bigger country than that. However, what you said was very important. China is now stepping up and saying, we're going to be the adult in the room. China is going to aggrandize their geopolitical status, especially in the region, because Trump is squandering our prestige and credibility. And the same thing is happening in Europe, where because of the Republicans and Democrats and the Congress and Trump going along with it, we're doing these unilateral sanctions against Russia. And Germany and the EU is saying, we're going to be the adults in the room and step up. And because of this dysfunction, and I'm not blaming Trump for the European-Russia situation, that's a whole other story, but the United States is seeing our prestige and our influence declining. I'm not sure that's a terrible thing, but it's not what Trump ran on. He said he was going to make America great again. And so far, what he's making us look, he's making America second rate again. And I think that's
disappointing. That's what they've been saying since he was inaugurated. So that's just the spin that's going on here.
Except you brought up that China is stepping up to be the adult in the room.
Right.
And that's embarrassing.
No, it's not. Here's what I'm saying.
It's humiliating to the United States.
I brought it up because I think the fact is there are unintended consequences of certain aspects of this. And one of the unintended aspects, and by the way, the media is helping China do this. The media, by the New York, I pointed out, this is on the front page of the New York Times right now. So the New York Times doing this is helping to drag the president down, which has been their goal since the day he was elected and when they were trying to keep him from getting elected. That's clearly their goal.
Well, absolutely. Now, Trump should be aware of that and not hand them ammunition to do that, throwing a temper tantrum.
Let me say something about China,
North Korea,
though, that's perfectly fair. Where's China on this? Maybe China needs to toughen up a little bit. China is supposed to be, you're supposed to be the babysitters for North Korea. You're supposed to be the hooks into this. And this is where Trump's frustration, and he's expressed this frustration towards China, and I think it's completely valid.
I think it's not, but go ahead.
Well, how's it not?
It's because China is the one with most at stake in the region.
Okay, then China's why can't the they calm North Korea down?
Well, partly is Trump keeps threatening them.
No, no, no.
Yes,
you're blaming,
yes, yes.
You're blaming Trump. No, no, no.
North Korea has
been acting this way for decades.
Well,
why can't China curb your North Korea? Put them on a leash. Put them on timeout. Do something. Why can't they control
them? Well, here's the thing. The way to help China do that is to have bilateral discussions with China, which the Trump family is very good at doing it. Doing discussions with China when it comes to getting our credit card companies ensconced in China to make untold trillions of dollars.
Do you think they didn't discuss North Korea at those discussions?
I think that Trump discusses things when Ivanka's selling shoes and handbags.
Okay, that's
in China.
An easy line.
No, it's true.
But,
he's
but
very
do you think
successful.
They didn't discuss North Korea? Because I could go back, they absolutely discussed North
I'm
Korea
not saying
at
that
every
they
one
don't.
Of those meetings.
I'm not saying that they don't. But keep it there and don't blow up everything by shooting your mouth off and pretending that a toddler in North Korea is threatening you, so you're going to hit him with a brick.
No,
that's
pun,
not
no
helpful.
Pun intended. In the third segment, Mike and I will be talking about stories that we think have been buried by the media. All that coming up on Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan with special guest host Mike Hirsch all week.
Fault Lines.
We are back. It's Thursday, and it's time for the third and final round of today's episode of Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan. We are joined by special guest host Mike Hirsch, the communications director of the Progressive Democrats of America, or as they're known, PDA, or as they're known, Public Displays of Affection.
Yes.
Is that a joke people make around PDA?
Sometimes.
Ever?
It's kind of faded, though.
Yeah.
PDA is kind of, I don't think the kids talk about that anymore.
No, they do. We have a kid here.
Does he talk about PDA?
My 16-year-old, yes. My 16-year-old Jack, who helps us out with the periscopes, you mentioned PDA the other day, correct, Jack? He's nodding.
Okay.
You can't. He's not mic'd up. But no, he did. He brought that. I forget where we were. It was probably inappropriate. But we were someplace.
It's we also say progressive displays of accomplishment as well. That also fits.
Okay. I'll let you have that just because, you know. The end
it's
of the week.
Thursday, right?
Now, so we talk about this all the time on the show because, you know, here's what I've learned from 10 years of doing journalism. It goes back to the Edwards story, the first thing I covered, but every single story I've covered. I can't just talk about the story. I have to talk about why the media is screwing up the story that I'm talking about. So when I was covering the John Edwards thing, I was like the only Democrat at the time who was saying, hey, it looks pretty obvious to me he had an affair. And I literally got kicked off Daily Kos for it and all this other hassles. And every single story I cover, it seems like I like to cover stories that other people aren't covering. So I thought we would do a segment today where I will talk about a story that I think the media has buried. And Mike will also, and we have not pre-planned what we're going to talk about. So I don't know what Mike's going to say. It's very exciting. I wish we had the Jeopardy theme. It's very exciting, but I'm going to talk about a story that I don't think has been covered well. And Mike's going to talk about a story that he does not think has been buried. And so I think my story is going to surprise Mike. And by the way, if you're a regular listener to the show, you have no idea what I'm going to say. Because if you think I'm going to come up with Ukraine or CrowdStrike, that's not what I'm doing today.
Well, check something out. I think that this show and this network routinely reports on things that are underreported or unreported. We just don't make a big deal about it as much as we probably should.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Because, you know, you're going to hear from a lot of people, don't listen to Sputnik. It's this, it's that. I don't want to even dignify what it is. I'm not saying only listen to Sputnik or don't listen to any particular, don't listen to them or don't listen to that. But if you don't listen to Sputnik, you're not going to hear these stories.
Yeah. I say listen to everything.
Listen to everything.
So do you want to go, we should do a coin toss or something like that. We need to have some dramatic way. But Mike, do you want to go first? I'll let you go first and then how's that?
Sure. I'll be happy to go first. And this, we're talking about un and underreported and this falls under more in the category of extremely underreported, but not entirely unreported, because the Washington Post ran a column from Katrina Vandenhoevel, who's the publisher or editor of The Nation magazine, one of the most venerable publications in the country. And so there was some coverage of this, and you talked about a woman who was a token conservative in the Washington Post. Well, Katrina Vandenhoevel is one of the token progressive contributors to the Washington Post. Most of them are middle-of-the-road establishment types. And what Katrina wrote about was this thing called Summer for Progress, and I'm full disclosure, I'm involved in that. Progressive Democrats of America and a lot of our allies are involved in that. And what Katrina writes is, if Democratic leaders are genuinely committed to a better deal, and that's a reference to the better deal that the establishment Democrats have announced, Chuck Schumer, Nancy Pelosi, so on and so forth. But she says, if they're genuinely committed to a better deal for the working class, they would be smart to consider another platform released this month, the People's Platform. And it was crafted by a coalition of grassroots organizations, including Our Revolution and Progressive Democrats of America, Food and Water Watch, National Nurses United. I should never start making a list because you always forget a lot of the most important people. And if I've forgotten anybody, I apologize. But a lot of good groups are working on this. And it calls for a lot of common sense solutions and very popular solutions to a lot of the country's problems. And it talks about Medicare for all, debt-free college tuition at state and community colleges, ramping up to a $15 per hour minimum wage, not overnight, so don't, you know, panic. It gets phased in a reasonable amount of time. A small sales tax on certain financial trades called the Inclusive Prosperity Act. And let's see what else. There's also a woman's health plank, equal access to abortion coverage, automatic voter registration. There's a bill to address the climate emergency that Tulsi Gabbard is putting the finishing touches on and be released any day now. There's the Justice Is Not For Sale Act, which would ban for private prisons that actually make money out of juicing up mass incarceration, and they're guaranteed a certain amount of money by the state and local and federal jurisdictions that promise to arrest and incarcerate a certain number of people so they can make money. Takes that out of the equation. And you'd think that if there was, if the Tea Party came up with a platform like this, and they kind of did, the mainstream media would be reporting it constantly. And the mainstream media has basically ignored this and refused to report it.
Well, now, let me push back a little bit on that, Mike, because I got to say, I'm just going to take one issue there. I could throw a dart and grab one at random. I'm going to grab the minimum wage one. Okay. I see a lot of stories in the mainstream press pushing the idea of a higher minimum wage.
Right.
I see not just editorials, I see news stories. I see stories covering the Fight for 15 protests that are union backed. I'm not saying a lot, though.
Not compared to what the Tea Party got, the coverage.
Oh,
the
I don't
Tea Party
agree
got.
on which issues.
I
did
think
the
we
Tea
could
Party
do like a LexisNexis search, and the Tea Party got way more coverage. I'm not conspiratorially minded, but I think that the mainstream media I thought the mainstream media thought that it would be a great idea to have this insurgency within the Republican Party, and the Republican Party would collapse because of it. So it might have been.
What were the stories you saw about the Tea Party? Because I saw a lot of stories in the media too, and they were all negative. They were negative. They were not positive stories about the Tea Party.
I'm not saying whether
they called them racist.
Well, some members of the Tea Party were, but I think
some
that it's
union
wrong.
People are.
I think it's wrong to dismiss them as
all racist.
Right. But some union people are. Trumka had to make a speech when Obama was running.
Yeah. Unfortunately, too many of every group is racist.
Right. My point, though. You remember the Trumka speech. Trumka came out and told union members, here's
my point.
Stop being so racist about Obama. You're confirming my point. Obama.
You're confirming my point. They had so much reporting about the Tea Party. Some of it was negative, some of it was positive.
It was overwhelmingly negative.
But there
negative.
Was reporting. And what I'm saying, there's just no reporting about this platform and this movement.
Yeah, but I would say that the issues, and again, I'm not trying to argue with you too much because the whole point is for us to both bring up stories we think aren't covered. But I see a lot of, this is the same argument that was used about Trump. A lot of people said in the election, oh, the media covered Trump a lot. Yes, they did, but it was all negative.
It wasn't all negative.
The Trump coverage?
A lot of Trump coverage.
In the election?
A lot of Trump coverage. Yeah. See, this is where you learn things.
What was the mainstream media's positive spin on Donald Trump?
The mainstream media's positive coverage of Trump. I will not let you move the goalposts. They pointed a camera and a microphone at him and just let him go.
That's not positive coverage.
It's very positive coverage because it was unfiltered Trump, and Trump was a master at talking about Trump.
They do the same thing for other candidates
as
well.
Not nearly as much.
They did the same thing for Hillary.
Not nearly as much. And here's what you're saying is, so you went from saying there was none to, well, they did it for other people too. I agree they did it for other people too. And it was the most positive coverage. It's the most positive coverage you can get is to give to let Trump talk about Trump.
That's why he's president now. I remember the coverage, and everybody listening remembers the coverage. They'd point the camera, he'd do a speech, then you'd have experts coming out going, here's why what he said is racist and wrong and everything else. They would then go and attack him.
And did he win?
Despite the media coverage.
Well, he won.
He won because people saw the difference between...
It's because he manipulated the media better than the media manipulated the people, put it that way. Trump trumped the media. And because for every minute that they gave him unfettered access to the airwaves, which were a lot of minutes, I mean, there have been estimates that he got billions of dollars worth of free media time.
But it was all attacking him. That's
my point. It was not all attacking him because a lot of it was him talking.
No, but...
Unless he was attacking himself.
I know, so they put on a clip. They did not just...
No, I'm not talking about put on a clip. There were times where they would show an empty podium where he was going to speak when other people had, like Bernie, had won a primary and was speaking. And part of it was to... distract people from Bernie because the mainstream media didn't want to cover Bernie. That was part of the strategy revealed in the WikiLeaks leaks. And the WikiLeaks emails showed that the Clinton campaign said, show people Trump unvarnished, unedited, and they'll hate him. And they were wrong. And they also said, don't show Bernie because if people see Bernie, they're going to like him. And they were right about that. So they got a 50% on that.
Like I said, I don't want to debate it too much. I wanted you to be able to say something you thought was buried, and you did. So here's the thing I think is buried, and it's going to be surprising to people because I've only barely talked about it on the radio, and I think it'll be surprising to you too. And it's a big story in a sense. It certainly affects the lives of the people, but one of the biggest buried stories in the past few years is actually the situation that's been going on in South Dakota involving Native American kids. And I'll explain why this is a buried story and some specifics on how it's been
just
buried.
Just for 1 second before you get into that. And I just want people, if they want more information on it, just look at summerforprogress.com and you can get all the information that you're not going to get from the mainstream media.
Great.
Go ahead, Lee. I'm sorry.
Okay, so there's a situation in western South Dakota near Rapid City, and it's been going on for years, where Native American kids are taken in hearings, taken away from their parents, in hearings that often last under a minute, where the parents are not allowed to hear what charges are against them, they're not allowed to present witnesses, or speak.
So they're denied due process.
They're denied constitutional due process, but there's an additional layer of it, which I won't even get it. Let's just leave it at that,
we've discussed this story, and I was outraged, and I'm really glad you're bringing this up.
But there's an additional layer to it, which is the Indian Child Welfare Act, ICWA, which also provides protections. And they've ignored that as well. So in addition to the regular constitutional protections that we all have, Native American kids have this extra layer, right? And so these hearings in South Dakota, hundreds of kids have been taken from their parents. And by the way, let me point out the outcome of these hearings. The kids have been taken in these hearings. And by the way, if I told you it was 80% of the time, that'd be pretty outrageous. If it was 90%, that'd be big. The number is 100%.
It's shocking.
The kids were taken in 100% of the cases. Now, why is that? What's going on? And the reason is that they passed a law in South Dakota. And by the way, South Dakota is run by Republicans, completely run by Republicans. In fact, it's so run by Republicans that in the last major election cycle, the Democrats chose not to run a candidate, for instance, for attorney general.
And I think that's ridiculous. Even if you don't think you're going to win, you should run somebody.
Right. But they didn't want to do it because Marty Jackley, who's the attorney general out there, is vicious and prosecutes. And
that's the other thing that you and I spoke about some weeks ago.
Enemies,
when
yeah.
the first times I met you, you were telling me about this.
Yes.
And I'm really glad that you're getting into these details.
And so I want to bring it up because I don't bring it up enough. And here's what's going on. The state of South Dakota a few years ago passed a law that, see, here's the way it works. If you adopt a kid, you get, the federal government kicks in a certain amount of money to help you with the adoption.
Now, there's always some money involved.
If the kid's a special needs kid, let's say you adopt some kid with autism or whatever.
Sure.
The government gives you more money and that makes perfect sense. So what they did in South Dakota was they said every Indian kid, every Native American kid is a special needs kid, which means you get extra money. Now, by the way, the former governor, who's now passed away, but he admitted this in an interview, that the Indians in South Dakota are a major source of federal money coming into the state of South Dakota.
It's horrible. It's a form of human trafficking, really.
It is.
You're making money off of exploiting children.
Now, you'd think someone would file a lawsuit against them, and someone did. The ACLU went in, and again, I don't agree with everything. Let me put it differently. I disagree with most things the ACLU does. That being said, they've done stuff. For instance, the ACLU, I'm going to say one thing they just did. They just filed suit against Metro, the subway system here in D.C., for not putting up posters, including a poster for Milo Yiannopoulos, my former colleague at Breitbart. Milo wanted to put up something for his book. It was literally his picture, and it said America's favorite troll, Milo Yiannopoulos, and then the name of his book. Okay, that was it. Metro said, we're not going to run that. There was literally no political message, except he's a political guy.
Except
so
they don't like him. They don't like his book.
They don't like him. And by the way, the ACLU tried to buy ads in the Metro, and Metro said, no, we're not going to sell you ads either. So it was, and their ad was like a picture of the Constitution or something like that.
Now, if the Washington Post refuses to run an ad, that's a private corporation. But the Metro.
That's the ACLU's
there
argument.
There you go.
That's right. And so the ACLU filed suit on this. Now, outrageously in South Dakota, the ACLU filed suit on this. And outrageously, and they lost, by the way. Let me point out, they went in front of a judge. The judge said, well, you can't do that. You can't just take kids without due process.
So the ACLU won the lawsuit?
Completely won, yes.
As you would hope.
Overwhelming victory. So they went back a few months later. And the judge said, well, have you implemented
like the consent ruling, decree or whatever?
The ruling, yeah. Have you done what I said? And the state of South Dakota said, no, we haven't. And the judge said, well, what do you mean you haven't? He said, well, we don't agree with your ruling.
So they're in contempt of court, basically.
Well, yes. But here's the reason I mentioned this. And this is the reason I call attention to this story. The reason, if this had happened in New Jersey or in Sacramento, California.
Well, somewhere where there's some semblance of an adversarial situation.
And an adversarial media. In other words, the problem in South Dakota is that it's a very big state. It takes about 8 hours to drive
it's
across
huge.
The state.
It's huge, yeah. It's one
but
of the biggest states.
It's got 800,000 people total.
Spread widely across the
That's
state.
That's right.
In like a few sort of metro areas, but you know.
That's right. And there's no press competition. And the media is all dependent on access. In other words, if you're the local newspaper and you tick off the state government in Pierre.
Yeah, you get frozen out.
That's right. And you can't have that because there's no competition amongst media. And the reason I mention it is because if the story doesn't make news in South Dakota, which it doesn't, by the way, the Obama administration issued its first amicus brief for any Indian-related issue on this case, got ignored in South Dakota, got ignored in the media. I could show you the papers.
This is something you actually agree with the Obama administration on, and they were ignored.
And here's the point. Whether I agree with it or not, that's newsworthy. Does that make sense? I do agree with it in this case, but it's newsworthy either way, since it's the first time any administration has ever weighed in on Indian issues in an amicus brief. The local paper, the Argus Leader, did nothing on that. Literally, that came out nothing. And so the reason I mention it is because you need to be aware that when we talk about media malfeasance at a national level, like I can talk like I did yesterday about the Washington Post burying facts about Paul Manafort being cleared by Ukraine. You got to watch out for it on a local level, too. This stuff happens on a local level, too. It's not just George Soros had to get his name in today.
Where can people find out more about this story, Lee? Because it's just too important to ignore.
Wow. Google South Dakota gone in 60 seconds Native American, and you'll find various stories about it. I've written about it, other people, but it's barely gotten coverage, and it's a complete outrage, and it's not even a partisan issue. It's outrageous. Anyway, we will have more. Our final day with Mike Hirsch will be tomorrow. You're listening all week to Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan with guest host Mike Hirsch.
Fault Lines.